Thank you for joining me for another episode of Women Blazers. I'm your host, Deanna Witter. And in the wake of the fight against racial injustice, I just want to take a moment as a Black woman to say I am saddened by the violent and unjust deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and so many others at the hands of law enforcement. Black lives matter. Equality and justice matter. The movement sweeping across the world is inspiring historical change, and I want to thank all of those out there using their voices and platforms to stand up against racism, injustice, and for your rights and the rights of your friends, families, and colleagues. Together, I believe we can truly change the world. Now on to episode 6. I'm excited to have Gretchen Scheer as my featured guest in this episode. Gretchen is the Chief Revenue Officer for the Houston Rockets of the NBA. In this episode, you'll hear Gretchen share her journey starting out in ticket sales and deciding to double down and stick with it at a time when people didn't see it as a career path with lots of future upside. She now celebrates an incredible 19-season career in counting with the Houston Rockets, where she blazed a path to the C-suite and has been a key contributor to growing the Houston Rockets as a top franchise in the NBA. Starting off, I remember, you know, coming to league meetings, and you were the only vice president of ticket sales woman in the NBA. And I remember meeting you, like I said, and thinking, God, this one was amazing. I guess I felt that connection about your style. And I was like, I want to be there. And if it wasn't for you, I don't know if I would have thought that this was even possible to get down the path that I've been on. So thank you, one, for blazing that path. So you went to Louisiana State University and received a degree in marketing. What was your plan going into college or while in college?
So I went to LSU on a diving scholarship. So I was technically part of the swimming and diving team, although divers do not swim. Don't let in. Everyone's like, oh, are you really fast? I'm like, no, I swam. I swam to the surface and to the side. So at that time, and it's still the time, like obviously if you're a college athlete and going to school, like there's not time to volunteer or work in an athletic office or get an internship or any of the things that are typically part of a college experience of getting a job after college. So while there's definitely a lot of skills and benefits of being a college athlete and setting that up for future success, it was not ideal to get a job after school. So I'm kind of a math nerd, so I thought I was going to be an engineer. I was super interested in civil engineering. And my freshman year, I was taking a calculus 3 class, and I missed a ton of school because you're traveling for work, et cetera. And at work. See, this is what happens in my life already. It was work then. So when you're traveling for training and meets and all of that business, it was very difficult to teach yourself calculus 3, I found out. So I got the only C I've ever gotten in my entire life. I was always a straight A student. Like I rarely had a B, and I got a C in this calculus 3 class, and I thought I was going to die. Like I thought it was the end of the world. So I decided to change majors into something that I could like read and study at home. This is obviously before online learning. So I switched to the business school. And I was just getting a kind of a general business degree with a specialization in marketing because I thought it was interesting and fun, and you could read and do a lot of projects on your own. So it fit with my kind of travel schedule the best. Mm-hmm. And then, and then I took a live event marketing class at LSU. We put on a pep rally for the football team at like a bar at the time. The football team was not good when I was there. And I fell in love with it. And I was like, and my professor was like, you know, you could do this for a living. It's like, you can plan parties for a living. Like, what? At a bar? Like, I am in for this. So, yeah. So I graduated with a degree in marketing. And then I found out you could do kind of sports and entertainment. And obviously the athletic part was a big tie for me. And I thought I was going to stay in school and get my master's and work in the athletic department. Since I had decided that I wanted to go the sports route. And then I ended up getting a job with a minor league team. And so, yeah, so I didn't stay in school and I didn't get my master's, but that's how I ended up in marketing. So
the minor league opportunity, is that your break-in moment then?
It was. So I will date myself. So I would, you know, I emailed any website of a team that I could find and an address. I would mail my resume with a cover letter. I would fax it. And the network that exists today for young adults to get into sports, like, definitely, if it existed when I was getting out of school, I certainly did not know about it. Right. And didn't have any connections. And so I was just on my own. And I got a couple of callbacks. And I think, you know, at that point, probably that I had no actual work experience, but I guess being a college athlete looks good on your resume. And there's some ingenuity to get them to open the envelope, I guess. So I got a couple of interviews with a couple of teams. And one was with a minor league indoor soccer team in Houston. And I was flying to my twin brother's graduation in San Antonio. And the guy that ran the team, he was the general manager of the team, met me on my there was a layover in Houston. So I was flying from Baton Rouge to Houston to San Antonio. And he met me, this is how long ago it was. He met me at the gate at the airport. And
get out of here.
Yeah. And I interviewed with him. Like on my layover at the airport gate, which you could never do now.
No.
And he was like, this is, you know, think about it. And he basically offered me the job on the spot, which probably should have been a warning about like the success of that team. Like,
What was the job?
The job was a marketing representative job. There were six people in the entire company. So you did everything. So we had a lot of international players. So I did everything to make sure they knew how to pay their bills at their apartment, to scheduling player appearances. And I was really, in hindsight, I was basically a corporate activation person. So I would make sure that all of the sponsorship assets were executed. And at that time, we were talking earlier about fried chicken in Houston. So so Chick-fil-A was a partner at the time. We sold Chick-fil-A family packs through our one woman ticketing department. And my job was to pass out the chicken sandwiches from the cooler. So they, like, the concessions were not set up to do it. So Chick-fil-A would deliver these coolers of wrapped up sandwiches and chips and drinks, and people would come and show their ticket, and I would hand them chicken sandwiches. So,
I mean, this sounds so glamorous. I can't believe, you know, that you're inspired to keep moving on this path.
It was good. Hakeem Olajuwon was actually friendly with the owner, and there was like a free throw kick. And I'm just thinking, I'm just remembering this now as I'm talking to you, because now at the Rockets, we do a first shot, which is a free throw, right?
Right.
So they would have someone, it was like a group sales asset, I guess. Someone would do like a penalty kick to start the game. And Hakeem came one game and did it. And I got to escort him onto the court. And that was a little bit before my time with the Rockets. So it was a little visionary there.
So you get the job with the team. How long were you with this minor league soccer team?
I started in May, and I graduated on Saturday, and I drove back to Houston, and I started work on Monday, and I've basically worked every day since then. May, the season started maybe like a month after I got there. I don't even remember now. Mm-hmm. It wrapped up in the fall, and we had a couple weeks of the off season, and then I remember we got called in for like an all-team meeting, which, remember, was six people. And right. I thought we were going to learn what we were doing in our first off season. And we all got envelopes with our names on it with Cobra information, because they were ceasing front office operations. So my break-in moment lasted all of, what is that? Six, seven months. And then I was starting back over from scratch.
Mm. So what'd you do from there? How'd you overcome that and move on?
So from there, the league, it was the WISL, the World Indoor Soccer League, was the name of the league. It's still around in some Dallas has a team. There's still like six or seven teams, and but it's changed. It was the MISL for a while, and I don't know what they're operating under now. They outsourced a lot of their ticket sales because it was a minor league indoor soccer team, so they didn't carry a lot of staff. So they used this company out of Portland. It was called Game Face at the time, and they would outsource all of their sales through like a call center. So the guy that ran that program was like, hey, we have internships. Like, this is your monthly stipend, and then you'll sell across all of our clients. They shifted their model in the years after I left there. So I moved to Portland, Oregon, thinking that this was going to be my next kind of big break in sports, and I was going to go wherever it took me. So I thought I would be there, you know, 4 to 6 months doing this program. And then eventually one of their clients would have a job and I would get a job. So I was there for 2 months. That was the first time that I had ever sold. And I found out that I had a skill and a talent for it, and I was doing pretty well. And I was coming back to Houston for my other brother's high school graduation. And they said, hey, while you're there, the Rockets are hiring a account executive. I think it was in season ticket account executive. Like, would you want to interview for it? I was like, yes. So I came back for my brother's graduation. I interviewed for the job. I got the job with the Rockets. I flew back to Portland. I drove back from Portland to Houston, and I started with the Rockets. So my plan was to move to Portland to go wherever it took me. And it took me. Mm-hmm. I moved it
right back home again.
Right back home again. So.
So what inspired and motivated you to take that sales and revenue path? I mean, to your point, like, you had some experience in it, but you had went to school for marketing. What was it about sales and at that time that was like, this is something I want to explore?
To Jamie's interview, and she was like, I didn't go to law school to sell tickets. I was like, I didn't go to college to sell tickets, right? So when I was talking earlier about some of the opportunities of random people who sort of reached out after I mailed my resume around, a lot of them were ticket sales jobs. And I definitely, mm-hmm. I was like, that's not what I want to do. And so I took this marketing role. I ended up a bit out of desperation, right? I needed a job. I wanted to stay in sports. I didn't have anything to tie me down. So I was like, sure, I'll move to Portland. I started selling tickets, realized I was good at it, realized I could make money at it, you know, and I had another friend who was in the industry, and I knew what her job was, and I knew some of the challenges. And so suddenly being close to the revenue and commissions started looking better than what I thought it would have been in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So when the Rockets had the opportunity, it was just kind of a no-brainer, right? I could come back home. If it didn't work out, you know, there was obviously a safety net here. And so that's how I started in tickets. I got there right as I started in June, the end of June of 2001, mm-hmm. the Rockets had won the championships in 94 and 95, and then had a really good, you know, competitive run for the next handful of years. And then 99, there was like the lockout, the team wasn't good. So fast forward to 01, they were kind of in this complete restructuring mode of what the organization was going to look like in the future. So they were super small. They had just gotten approval to build what is now Toyota Center. So when I came in as a account executive, I had come from a call center. So I had come, right. I had come from that inside sales mentality, and they didn't have that. That was not their culture at the time, but it was what they knew they were building. So when I joined, mm-hmm. They didn't have a vice president of ticketing. So I came in and, you know, a couple weeks later, they brought in a new VP who was really brought in to completely change and overhaul the culture and the department. So when he got there, the work ethic and, you know, the mentality of kind of inside sales that I had grown up in over the last couple months working in this call center was what he was looking for. So I got, mm-hmm. I got noticed, you know, pretty early on. And he was a great mentor. And he just said, look, like, this is what happens, right? People take ticket sales jobs to get started in the industry. And then people move on, right? They move into marketing, they move into corporate, they move into something else. And nobody stays in ticketing, right? And so it was something that I just naturally got. Like, I understood inventory management. I understood pricing. Like, it was just a unique time where I just decided that's how I was going to make my path, right? Like, a bit the path of least resistance. Like, people were leaving ticketing to go try to do other things. And I was like, yeah, I'll stay here and become the expert.
So. Obviously, I mean, you did become the expert, and you've climbed the revenue ladder, let's say, you know, with the Rockets over the span of what, 19, 20 seasons,
this was my 19th season. So
19th season. I mean, that's incredible. So how have you been able to stay at this one sports entity and climb the ladder? Like, what's your secret? We all want to know.
I mean, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, right? So, you know, I tell people all the time, like, what do you need to know about working in sports? I'm like, look, the reality is, if this is really what you want to do, you just got to be prepared to take any opportunity that comes to advance and move on. And I believe that. It just so happens that every time I was ready for something, or we were moving in the same direction as an organization, those things collided and were happening mm-hmm. in synergy. So as I mentioned, when I joined the Rockets, it was a super small organization. We were building the arena. So we were going from being a tenant and not a very good team. We drafted Yao. We were building Toyota Center. So we were really building up the organization. We were building an org chart. We are going to have a premium sales department. There was going to be arena operations, like all of these things that we didn't have in the other building were coming to light. So there was a lot of opportunity for growth along the way. And we decided to start an inside sales program. And I applied for it, thinking that originally I wasn't going to apply for it. My boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, who you heard me arguing with earlier, I was like, I don't know if I'm ready. Like, they're never going to look at me. Like, I haven't been here that long. I don't have a lot of experience. And I was like talking myself out of like all these reasons why they would never give me this opportunity. He was like, so what? So you don't get it and you still have a good job. He's like, you've got to put your name in the hat. Like, these things don't come along very often. And so I did. And, you know, much fewer people internally applied for it because we were starting this inside sales department. It was an unknown. And you were about to open a building. And so the salespeople who had been there for a while, like, knew that, you know, that's commission. And if you're taking mm-hmm. this management role where you don't know if you'll hit a goal, you don't know if you'll get a bonus, you don't really have commission, you're not really going to make much more money. And then it doesn't pan out, then what? And I was young and naive, and I was like, I don't have anything to lose. So I applied for it, and it turned out really well. And then we opened the building. And then we needed to build a ticket services team. And then we needed, you know, group sales, inside sales, season sales. We didn't have a director at the time. So then they were building the director level. So the option was, you know, promote someone from within who, you know, helped us open the building and helped us build this team that we have now, or bring someone in with more experience, right, to set us up for the future. And so they looked at internal options mm-hmm. and external options, and I got that opportunity. And so each time I've been ready for more, that opportunity has happened internally as well. So mm-hmm. I've been pretty fortunate. So, and along the way, we have amazing people who do the vast majority of the work who, you know, obviously make me look like I know what I'm doing. So.
Well, I think, I mean, just from your experience and how you've been able to move up and evolve with the team and grow with the team as they were going through these changes throughout the years, I mean, a lesson definitely learned from that process, and something I've even learned in my own. It's like, if you come in and you do the work and you succeed and you're always putting yourself in the position to be the best candidate, like, if that's the focus, like, you always want to put yourself as the best internal candidate, even if the organization goes another route, ultimately, at least you know you did everything you possibly could to be the person considered internally. And luckily for you, you put yourself in a situation where you were the internal candidate and probably always the best candidate to come out with the position.
Yeah, right? And I you know, I've had a great boss along the way who that, at, you know, at his core, like, developing his people mm-hmm. and giving our team the best chance for success and growth has been his priority. And, you know, it's hopefully, you know, that's seen as my priority for my team as well, is really, you know, there's definitely benefit of having a fresh set of eyes and, you know, a fresh look at things. But our goal all along has been, you know, to challenge ourselves every year, even though we have a lot of tenure with our team, to look at things differently and make sure that we're, mm-hmm. you know, if you were starting over, you know, I tell my team all the time, like, look, if you're starting over and going to a brand new team, what would you do differently? What things would you implement? What are we not doing that we should be doing? And staying kind of fresh and relevant and not getting complacent when you've been in one place for a long time is not easy. You know, it's a hard thing to do, right? To keep moving. And so anytime there's another opportunity that's out there, whether it be something that someone's looking at me for or for our team, it's like, if I feel like I got to go somewhere else to achieve something different, you know, what does that say about what we're building, what we're trying to build internally? Mm-hmm. And it ends up being a motivation, you know, to stay and kind of create new challenges for ourselves.
Just a follow-up question. Obviously, so far you've obviously applied or they've selected you for these promotions. Has there been a time internally where you wanted something or that you were trying to work toward that you ultimately were turned down or passed
yes.
over?
Yes. So I say this all the time, and I say it internally. I'm like, yeah, I remember like 3 or 4 years ago when we did X, Y, and Z. So I go, yeah, I remember that. It was 8 years ago. I'm like, God, I've been like time flies.
Like I've been here too long.
Yeah,
it does. Time yeah. flies when you're having
so
fun.
So I
are busy.
We had moved into Toyota Center, and we had built kind of this sales culture under our VP, and you know, the organization had decided that it was time to sort of you know, kind of change the leadership there to take us, like, you know, he did a great job of building the culture and setting us up for opening the building and making sure that we were set up. But what does the next 5 years look like? And so they made a change, and I really mm-hmm. thought that I was ready for it. That was my opportunity. I had, I knew that at least my name was mentioned in these VP roles mm-hmm. in other areas. And so I really felt like that was the time for me. But I also recognized that, you know, I had grown my career with, you know, a VP who they had just parted ways with. So I get that mm-hmm. that dynamic. And yeah, and they ended up hiring someone from the outside, not from the industry. And it was a really, really rough transition for me. How my mm-hmm. now boss, who was, you know, at the time, my boss's boss, like, put up with me, I will never know. But it was, yeah, it was a rough transition. I mean, our VP who had left was beloved and had built a great culture. And this was sort of an outsider that came in, and, you know, it was a really tough time at, mm-hmm. at work. You know, in hindsight, we eventually got there. We built a great relationship. She's one of my like closest friends and mentors to this day. And what I didn't realize at the time is that I may not have learned, you know, like sports business type skills from her, but like what she was teaching mm-hmm. me at the time, like I didn't realize what I was learning from her. And it ended up being a great time. And so what I learned from that was, one, I was like, I was a jerk. And so, but also it's just, you know, keeping an open mind and trusting that people are making the best decisions for why. And then also for me, it's just whenever I've not been able to provide someone the opportunity that they think that they deserve, and I made a decision a different way, like I've made a very concerted effort to be as open and transparent with that decision to kind of prevent some mistakes that I made along the way.
So currently you are the chief revenue officer now at the Rockets. is there one area that you focus on more or spend more majority of your time on? And if you can just share a little bit, you know, about your role and what your responsibilities are.
Yeah. So my role is sort of what it sounds like. I oversee all the revenue coming in through on the team side through the Rockets. There's a lot of overlap, and then all the support roles that go into that. So we have a very different relationship with our ticketing vendor that dates back to 2001, right? 2002, leading into the building, mm-hmm. We went with a proprietary off-label system, which, you know, through the years has morphed, you're very familiar with it, has morphed into a variety of different things mm-hmm. and is access. So because of that, our relationship with how we look at ticketing is differently. So our head of ticket operations reports directly to me. All of our ticket sales, all of our suite sales, all of our premium, our corporate revenue, and then our business analytics team that sort of supports the entire organization, but mainly the revenue streams rolls in. And then, you know, I share responsibilities with the GM of the building on our food and beverage. So he really oversees all of the operations and guest services piece of what goes into that. And then I work really closely on the revenue side with them. When I first moved into the role, we were building out, we had done a restructure, corporate, the addition was the corporate sales department rolled in. So all of our revenue was not coming up under one oversight. And so, you know, restructuring that to have one person in charge of all of those revenue streams overseeing and making sure that we were integrating the best way possible was the priority. Separately, we were really growing our global business. And so our corporate sales department, we were splitting. So our VP of corporate was spending so much time in China and with our global team and in other parts of the world building up that piece of that business. When I first moved into that, that was the area that I didn't know the best. So the first part, mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time on the corporate partnership side, really learning that part of it, which, you know, I feel like after that many years in the same organization, you have an idea, but until you're in it, you know, you don't really know. And then once I got a handle on that and we restructured a couple pieces, we were starting to do some renovations on the premium level. So then my attention switched and I spent a lot of time in the premium area based on what we were working with there. And then, we had Chris Paul in Western Conference Finals, and then we had the trade for Westbrook, and then ticketing sort of blew up, you know, during the course of the last handful mm-hmm. of years. And so making sure that then we switched to the ticketing side. And then right now it's all over the place, as you can imagine. So it's what I like the best just on any given day yeah. and on any given moment, you know, what is most pressing changes. But, you know, my main responsibility is to make sure all of those are running smoothly together and are integrated in the best way possible. So
How would you describe your leadership style?
I think I would probably describe it differently than, you know, my team would describe it. I feel like I'm self-aware with my challenge. So I would describe it as challenging and competitive. Would be my leadership style. Like, I feel like I'm pretty direct. And it's, yeah, I mean, I hope that I don't expect anything from anyone that I wouldn't do myself. My biggest challenge in the leadership style is recognizing that people are not, you know, are not the same way as me. They do not manage the same way as me. They do not have the same outlook and views and opinions as me. Right. And, but yeah, I'm pretty direct and challenging and competitive, and it's not, I've become more self-aware over the last couple of years. And I think understanding of why I am that way. And it's just mm-hmm. meant to, like, I just want everyone to be the best, right? And I want us to be right. the best, and I don't want to leave anything uncovered, right? And I get frustrated when I see other things moving faster than how I think it should. So. Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's funny because, you know, you and I have known each other for a very long time. And one thing that I felt like you and I always I felt like a connection to you right when I met you is like you don't hold anything back. You're very direct. You have no fear of sharing or saying what you see, whether it be frustration or even praise. And that's very similar to me as well. To your point, from a leadership style perspective, you know, I've tried to refine that in a way where I can be collaborative and open the best that I can. But deep down, I know I just want to go, listen, this is what we need to do. Let's just run. And with the goal to always like be striving for greatness. And if we're not striving for greatness, like, why are we doing this? And so I think that has always been something that I've always tried to work on, just the sense of openness and understanding that my way is not always the right way. And, you know, there's other ways of doing things and just trying to be open always as a leader. And I think that's something in an area I personally have grown immensely on over the last couple of years. And I hope to continue to grow as well. So what do you wish you knew at the beginning of your career that you know now?
You know, in the beginning of my career, I was always concerned about like what was next, you know? And I wish that I would have kind of taken the time to enjoy some of the ride along the way. And then in the beginning of my career, it was like, I just always thought there was like one way to do things, you know? And I was, I don't know if judgmental is the right way, but, you know, I wish I would have been kind of more accepting of different styles and different techniques. And, you know, I was kind of brash. I'm still pretty direct, but, you know, I wish I would have had a bit more softness and understanding and compassion earlier in my career.
And you've been an advocate for growth. Like, you've been very supportive of myself, and I know of many women in this industry. And you even, you know, been a big part of creating WISE here in Houston. You know, what is it about mentorship that what does that mean to you, especially in the women's space, and how has WISE even provided those opportunities to contribute?
Earlier I talked about the opportunity that I didn't get internally, and my boss at the time, and her name is Celise, and she is wonderful. And when she was leaving the organization, and when she was leaving, I was moving into that role. You know, the last couple of months there, she was like, you know, you've been a worker like your whole life, not my whole life, right? But like in my career, right? It was like, I kept my head down. What is my job? What is my boss? What does ownership need from me? Right. And making sure that I was doing the best thing possible to do what, you know, I was being paid to do, right? I didn't spend a lot of time on myself, right? And, you know, I made sure that my team was taken care of and that I was developing my team. But outside of like growing that network, it really wasn't a priority to me. And I just had my kids, you know, and she sat me down. She was like, you are going to break. Like, you have got, she's like, you have got to get a like network of women, right? That you're not friends with, that you're not family with, that you don't work with, right? That you can lean on and like trust. And so there was this organization that she really pushed me to join. It's the Executive Women's Partnership through Houston. None of it is sport. I mean, some people in there are sports, but it's basically C-level women that have a vast majority, that are responsible for a vast majority of the company. And it just like, I'm in awe of like these, they're now my friends, like every, but it wasn't something that I prioritized early on in my career. And so when I did start to kind of reach out and build that network, it was really for me. Like, I wasn't looking to do it for other people at the time. And then at the time when, you know, like your life goes so fast, you know, especially in this industry, especially when you're a woman and you have kids, and it's like, you just wake up and you're like, holy shit, like, how has this been 19 years? You know, I feel like I'm still the inside sales manager 90% of the time. That, you know, you really got to stop and prioritize it. And it wasn't until like the 40 under 40 announcements had come out a couple of years ago when I got honored with that. And it was like these women from all over the place just started like reaching out saying like, this is so great. Like, they were just so congratulated. And I was like, what? Like, it was mind-boggling to me that anyone would look at like me or my career path or whatever, and that it could be inspirational in a way that I didn't meet anyone. And then I get there and there's 6 women in the class. It's 40 under 40, right? Like not 10, right. not 10, not 12 yeah, right. under 40. And they were like bragging about how it was like the biggest class of females they'd ever had. I'm like, there's 6 of us. Like, what are we told? Like, what is going on? Right. You know, and that was sort of, and at the same time, right. There was a couple women in Houston who had moved from other cities and had been a part of WISE and were shocked that Houston didn't have a part of WISE. And so they needed a board of directors. And so we, so we were on the founding board to bring it to Houston. And it has been, it's been such an incredible experience to me. And I think that, you know, it's something that I wish would have been around, or I would have had the foresight, you know, younger to do sooner. I just didn't. I feel like you're just so busy with life, you know, that it's sometimes to stop and kind of prioritize what, you know, what else is important doesn't always happen. And I'm glad that we finally got to the point here.
Mm-hmm. Now, you already mentioned we're both mothers. Jamie and I talked about being mothers as well. And you're interested. I mean, obviously, you and I share in something. We're both mother of twins. And Jamie said she didn't think she could be a mom until she, you know, saw that I was doing it with twins. And I was like, no, I didn't see how I could do the twin thing and do this until I knew you, Gretchen. So, so how do you manage the lifestyle of being this CRO, this executive professional at your level, married to? Let's note this. You're also married. You mentioned that you had married your boyfriend that you met there at the Rocket. So you're married to another sports executive that you work with and a mother of twins.
Yeah.
How the hell are you doing this? Right. Like, how does it all work for you? How does it come together?
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Drinking on a daily basis.
Yeah. I mean, life just hits you, man. And you just wake up and then there's the next challenge and you do that. And there's the next challenge and you just do that. And, you know, and whether it's twins or not twins, like when you have that first baby, like your whole life changes. And so people ask me all the time about what it's like with mm-hmm. twins. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I never had one kid. Like I've always had two. And I just, right. you know, but I feel like the twin part is probably harder for, I'm going to say the dad, right? But because typically the mothers, right, are with newborns are doing the, you know, primarily the feed. Yeah, the majority of the work, right? Majority and with twins, like you don't have that. Like your partner is just all in, right? There's 2 feedings all the time. There's no alternating nights on who gets to sleep and who doesn't, you know? And so you got to have a supportive partner, right? That is on board. And, you know, in the beginning, like maybe it's a bit helpful because they always have a friend. I will tell you they're 12 right now. And thank God that they are not currently in the house, or otherwise you would hear them yelling. I spend all of my day since this, you know, since we've been at home, like just yelling, like stop yelling, like all day, like stop yelling. Like, yeah. Like they fight from the moment that they wake up till the moment they go to bed. But it's a lot, you know, when they were younger, when they were babies, like I really didn't feel, I mean, I think we all have guilt, but like they couldn't express, they were just super excited when I got home, you know, like, and I made sure I was like, nobody's allowed to give them nighttime baths. Like that is my thing with them. And it wasn't until they got older, right, where they were like, mommy working late again tonight. I'm like, yes, mommy's working late again tonight, right? And that's what my kids call it. They call it is tonight a late night. Like that's just how it is in our family. I'm like, yes, tonight's a late night, right? And you know, when they get older and they can express, right, that they're sort of missing it or not doing, you know, that's when it got harder for me. And then now that they're a bit older, like now I'm just a cool mom, right? Like the kids, like they want to do their birthday party at a game. Sure, we can do that. You know, my son got to go. Yeah. Our head trainer saw that I was there with my son and a couple friends. And he's like, can I borrow them for a few minutes? I'm like, yep. And he took my kids into the locker room before the game. I'm like, my daughter wasn't there with us, but, you know, so now they think it's cool, right? Because it's fun stuff. But I worry about it all the time. Like I'm not here. Like there's somebody else that spends more time with my kids than I do, you know, and that's just the trade-off. I'm a better mom mm-hmm. because of it. I don't think I was cut out to be home as much as I've been home these past 4 to 6
this
weeks.
This is all proof.
Know, but my son is like, he's nuts, but he's super empathetic and he's just a sweet kid. And everything that he does, he like always wants to make sure that like other people are happy. So my daughter is a complete badass and super independent and competitive. And so I look at him and I'm like, yeah, they're good. Like they're not screwed up. I must be doing something right.
The kids are all right. Yeah. And similar to your family, you know, your kids, my kids are like, oh, is this a late night or early night? And it all kind of has a sense of lateness. Like right. I don't get home before 7 with our commute in Houston. So everything feels a little late. It's like, will you be here to put me to bed or not put me to bed? And that's so funny you bring up the bath, because that's the same thing. I'm the bath person. So those kids, if right. I'm yeah. busy for 5 yeah. days, they will go dirty for 5 days. Like, but the bath is mommy's responsibility while dad tackles everything else. So it's definitely a balance, and you have your own traditions and they'll create their own memories and experiences, that are unique to them and our lifestyle. And so it, to your point too, it's like, there's always these challenges, but those challenges are just life. And so they're only hard if you want them or think they're hard, but to your point, you just get through each day. And when you go to bed, you feel good about what you accomplished in that day. And there's going to be days yeah. you don't feel good about it, and you'll make it up, you know? So what advice do you have for sports professionals who want to follow in your path? Because your path is unique in a way.
I'm really careful about that, because one thing that I think that folks that have worked for me that have gone on to other teams, and people have goals, and you know, I know that you and I have talked about like what your first goal was in your career and when you wanted to achieve that. And I'd had people, you know, that have worked for me that have like specific goals to get there. And I get asked all the time, like, how do you do what you do? Like, what was your path? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm super careful of giving anyone advice about following my path. And my yeah. advice is like, look, you don't follow my path. Like, you got to follow what your path is, and everyone's is different. And like mm-hmm. you and Jamie and like, you know, Michelle's has been a little bit more, you know, more similar to me in terms of one space. But at the end of the day, like, you got to do what you mm-hmm. love doing, and, you know, be able to put your head down on the pillow at night and be happy with the day that you accomplished. Right. Whether that is, you know, working at home and, you know, being a full-time, you know, we're all full-time moms, but, you know, but staying at home and not working outside the home mm-hmm. or having a path like we have where we're away a lot. Like, everybody's got to find their own path, right? They have to do things that are going to make themselves mm-hmm. happy and fulfilled. And you got to do it in a place that you feel that you are valued and fulfilled. And if those things don't match up, you know, I think that's why I've been so not hesitant, but why it's worked out for me to stay with the Rockets. Like, this place has like literally become a part of me. And so to leave that, to follow like somebody mm-hmm. else's path on what that next step might be, you know, there's just things that I would be giving up that are just too important to me to do, but might not be important to somebody else. Right. But yeah, I mean, right. You got to stay close to the money if you want to do it. Right. So you should start in sales. But you know, in my path, like, these roles, when I started, like, there were SVPs, like, there weren't chief revenue officer type roles. When I started my career, there were, you know, I think when I went to league meetings outside of the women that were working at the league, right, there was like 3 of us. There were not very many. And
right.
And then the top, kind of those top level jobs that you saw were not people who came from ticketing, you know? So now when I look around the league and there's, you know, I'm on CRO calls or with our colleagues, like, there's a, you know, there's a group of us that like came up through ticketing, you know? And when I was starting, it was like, we were building mm-hmm. ticket sales cultures, and we were fighting, you know, to make ticket sales be an important part and a valued career path, you know, and that was 20 years ago too. So to see how far that's come, has been really cool.
And that's a wrap on episode 6. Thank you for listening to Women Blazers, and thank you to Gretchen for breaking barriers and sharing her journey and insights with all of us today. As always, I encourage you to follow the podcast on Instagram at Women Blazers to stay connected. And look forward to episode 7 dropping Monday, June 22nd, featuring Angela Spence, Director of Sales for Atlanta Hawks of the NBA and College Park Skyhawks of the G League. Until next time, look out for one another and stay safe and healthy.